Hey, everybody. This is podcast episode number 5 with Alumni Grit. I'm your host, Kevin Williams, and today we've got another guest. He is a professional in finance and alternative renewable energy. Is that more or less right? No.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, okay. And his name is Dan Fleischer. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about, you know, kind of where he kind of came from. He went off to Stanford Business School, an esteemed graduate of that fine institution. And didn't take like a straight linear path to business school. You basically kind of did a couple of different things. You had another graduate degree, and
I had no path. Kevin.
Yeah, no path whatsoever, and you still got in. So how the hell did you do that? Is what we're trying to figure out. And basically what that application process was like for you, kind of where you were in your head and in your heart. And then, you know, we get a lot of people that are like, look, dude, how should I be thinking about first year and my summer internship and my second year? And then, you know, looking back, what kind of advice would you give yourself? And then kind of what you've done, you know, over the past few years since coming out. So yep. That's what we're going to talk about. All right, guys. So this would be really good regardless of whether you're in your cubicle, you know, living the dream. Can't wait to get out and take that coffee break. Or if you're in the gym, whatever. This would be good to plug in and listen to this. So that being said, let's start. So Dan, to walk us through kind of, you know, your story in about, you know, 3 to 4 minutes. You know, you basically, I know you're from New Jersey, you, you know, the size of your family, sibling dynamic, kind of, you know, did what when you were a kid on the side, you know, good student, fair student, high school, that kind of thing. And then, you know, you went to college down south, I know, and then kind of, you know, what you did right after graduation. Just walk us through that real quick.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Kevin. Pretty typical, nondescript, middle-class upbringing. Grew up in the middle of New Jersey. I have one older brother. He's about 5 years older than me. So he went off to college when I was still in middle school. He was a real smart whippersnapper. So I was always compared with him. So, you know, I always did other things. I was very athletic. I sort of had that. I did all sorts of sports, but very competitive, diver, swimmer, gymnast, actually. And, you know, I grew up, parents were divorced when I was, you know, a teenager. So basically run amok my whole childhood. Yeah, I don't know, you know, if that was good, bad. I got myself into a little bit of trouble, but, you know, somehow managed to pull it through, graduated pretty well. And I think, you know, one thing I'll say there is, you know, growing up, the sports really brought discipline to my life. I had something that I was excited about and took up a lot of time. And so school kind of came naturally just because I had to force, you know, I had to focus on it, get it done and knock it out of the way so I could do the things I liked to do, which was run around and do all these other, you know, sports. Graduated out of a public high school, you know, with no real claim to it. And went down to Emory University. I applied to lots of other schools, didn't get into them, but was happy to go to Emory in Atlanta, Georgia. And that worked out really well for me. You know, I think one of the lessons I've learned in my life is things happen for a reason, as corny as that sounds. And
what'd you major in at Emory?
That's another good question. So I majored in the well-traveled paths of ecology and political science, which, you know, anybody targeting business school would, you know, of course, have at the top of their list.
Obviously.
Yes, obviously. So, no, I went down, I went to school, but I was pretty pumped to get there. Loved the weather. I played ice hockey while I was down there and got myself really involved in a lot of the student government things. And, you know, and for me, going to a school, ironically, that didn't have a lot of D1 sports allowed me to kind of have a good presence on campus and make myself a little bit of a name for who I was without being overshadowed by jocks and other people.
Right. Okay. And then afterwards, did you get the grad degree? Did you go to LSE immediately after, or you did something else in between? And go walk us
through that? No. Again, you know, so I graduated, you know, with no visibility or idea whatsoever what I wanted to do. I had passions, things I was passionate about. I, you know, obviously studied politics and environment and had these sort of crazy off-the-wall ideas about how businesses with a social conscience would be good businesses, but I knew nothing about business. Right. Nobody in my family was in business. So I kind of, I ventured out and was recruited off campus by some obscure little private client services, sort of wealth management fund based in Atlanta. Some really smart guys, except for hiring me anyway. And, you know, and that was it. My theory was I was going to learn about business by you know, being in the industry. And I went to school to learn about all those sort of conceptual things that that you need. Now, I'm not sure I'd recommend it exactly quite that way. I mean, I did some things accidentally that worked out in my favor.
Sure, yeah.
You know, studying some economics classes, being good in math, and having a few things that I could point to when it came time later down the road turned out to be very helpful to me. But I didn't do them consciously. I didn't have very good guidance or advisors going through things. I just sometimes made a few good mistakes.
So you basically, all right, so it sounds like you were a fairly active student in terms of extracurriculars. You did some student government stuff, or at least you were at leadership roles on the side
yeah.
when you were in school, in addition to doing some sports stuff, right? So you had that going for you. That was a double major, or was 1 year?
Yeah, double major.
Double major. Okay, so heavy course load. You had some quant courses, which helped you out.
Economics, yeah. particularly some accounting, which I took. I thought I was taking it pass-fail, and then I got in it, and they told me you can't take classes pass-fail in the business school here.
That's
I was funny. Like, oh, crap. So.
That's funny. Were you always, like I came out with a math minor just because someone told me, oh, mm-hmm. if you're going to do grad school someday, you got to have some math stuff or some quantitative stuff. Did you do well in that stuff? Like, because, you know, econ majors, you know, you got the theory courses and then you have like the quant courses. Did you?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I did really well in school in those classes.
Yeah.
And that didn't hurt when push came to shove.
Of course.
You know, so, you know, one advice is, you know, there are all those things that stick with you for a long time in your life, longer than they ever should be relevant, like your GPA. So, you know, getting, you know, putting up the scores when you need to. Are the kinds of things you got to do to basically open up doors later on, or put it a different way, and have you know this from being on both sides of the table, to not get screened out so that somebody can take a look at you a little bit more closely. You got to put up the scores. So there's, you know, you just got to know how you're going to be measured later in life.
Exactly.
And that's kind of that helped me out.
Exactly.
Frankly.
Exactly. All right, so basically it's graduation down at Emory. You graduate, you go work for this private client services firm or fund in Atlanta?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Okay, and how long did you stay there before you said, okay, now I need to think about my next move?
Yeah, well, I was there a little less than a year. And what it was, you know, it was interesting for me. It was cold calling. So really, you know, smart guys from the tax and accounting side, as well as from the legal side, coming together and coming up with solutions for people, high net worth individuals, right? And their idea was, you know, things slip through the cracks between advisors. We got the solutions, wrap it with insurance products, which, by the way, is how we make a lot of money, and then, you know, invest assets. And so my job was, you know, basically to cold call a bunch of business owners every day. And I can tell you, you know, if you ever thought getting turned down at the bar, you know, was hard on your ego, I had a sheet in front of me that I had to dial 100 times every morning, and I had to try and get, you know, it was a numbers game. Out of 100 dials, 10 people you would get through to, and if you could get one meeting, then that was great. And then I'd take my senior guy with me, and we'd go. And what I learned is a couple of things. One, it gave me real thick skin.
Yeah.
Two, it really became, you know, a challenge to try and get through to the decision maker, the owner. And, you know, learn how to basically befriend and, you know, connect with people. And then three, ultimately over that period of time, it was a study in entrepreneurship. Because what I did was meet a bunch of entrepreneurs. I went out and probably had about 75 meetings, you know, multiply that by two or three in terms of the number of substantive conversations I had. And, you know, and met all different types of entrepreneurs, many of whom, you know, really didn't have Stanford MBAs or anything else, but I learned what it was to be an entrepreneur, and then I basically realized at the end of that I have a lot of skills, and you know, this career of serving somebody else's, you know, future when they die and wrapping it in insurance was good for a lot of people, and I hope to be a client, but it wasn't what I wanted to spend, you know, my entire career without going out and being on the management side.
I would say, dude, like just sitting across the table from like that many entrepreneurs has to be inspiring, because you're looking at somebody who just, you know, through their grit, just rolled up their sleeves and built a business over, you know, 15, 20, sometimes longer.
Yeah. And I learned two main things. I, and you know, I, there are two takeaways. One, was here were a bunch of people who were passionate about something, or at least were confident in one thing that they knew, whether it was scrap metal or automotive repair or, you know, or being a CFO. I mean, they just knew that they knew something, or they had a clue what they were talking about. And then two, they took a small risk, a calculated risk. Now, a small risk may have been taking out a second mortgage on their house, but it was something that was calculated. And to me, those were the two takeaways.
They all had those ingredients, yeah.
No matter who they were, no matter whether they were worth $2 million or $200 million, they all had those sort of two elements in their story. And so that inspired me. And that's when I also started to realize, you know, I didn't want to be solving their problems about what to do with their assets and their life. Because a lot of times I'd have phone calls with entrepreneurs who were saying, well, can you help me raise capital? I'm trying to grow. And, you know, I'm trying to decide whether or not I can make this decision. And, you know, for me, I was like, well, you know, I probably could help you if I had the tools.
Right.
And that was when I decided to move on. And I decided to start looking for a job in management consulting, strategy consulting. And that took me into sort of the world of a real career search and then learning backwards the lessons about, you know, what I should have done with my academic and other, you know, careers.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. So basically, you know, from what you're saying so far, you did well in school, double major, and you know had some good grades, and you took a local, you stayed local for all intents and purposes for your very first job out of school.
Yep.
Right. And it you know, probably, you know, gave you somewhat of a foundation. It probably turned out to be something a little bit more educational than you thought it was going to be.
Correct.
Right? And then you got to a place where you said, okay, now the next step is what?
Yeah. So, I mean, I made my decision to join these guys in part because, you know, they found me and they impressed me. They were really smart people who I wanted to learn from. And I think that is something, you know, I have learned over and over again through bad experiences, good, that is one of the most important things about making a lot of decisions, whether it's schools, whether it's career. And so, you know, that's just something I would note there. You know, and then I started looking for a job in strategy consulting because I want to really understand how the decision-making process inside a business of these leaders, not about their family, but about their work was.
Oh, and by the way, just to set the stage, time-wise, this is 1996, 97.
Yes, this is so 96, this is, 97.
You know, the internet, all that stuff is starting to happen. You're starting to see some of these IPOs. You're starting to hear some of this buzz about this stuff out in California.
Funny enough, yes. You know, one of the interesting clients, you know, had one of the first internet banks of this. And I said, wow, there's a lot going on here. And so that's when I started to apply, you know. So I went back to the Career Center at Emory University. They gave me books because there wasn't the internet. So I had the career books, you know, what color was my parachute?
Dinosaur times.
And all that stuff. And I started looking around and, you know, at the time there was Anderson Consulting and I wanted to apply for them. And I found out the hard way that they have a cycle. And so they couldn't hire me whenever I just wanted.
All cycle, yeah.
And so I started sending out these cover letters. I started working on my resumes, asking people for feedback, how to package myself. Again, because I really had no insight into what was right or wrong.
Right.
And so I really just reached out to everybody I knew, you know, to try and get some feedback. So I spent a lot of energy in those early CVs and cover letters, how to tell my story. And in fact, it, kind of ironically, my cover letter ultimately got published because I reached out to somebody who had authored a book on, like,
really?
Cover letters that succeed. And by the time I was done, she was so impressed with, you know, how I'd crafted my story. And, you know, and that was it. You know, that was sort of off to the races. And
For the benefit of us listening, in a nutshell, how did you create in that cover letter? What did you say that was so impressive?
You know, I think, one, it's getting their attention without being overtly obnoxious. You know, I just started out with something that was like, you know, I'm interested. You know, I'm you know, thrilled to hear that you're looking for somebody with these skills. And then I sort of introduced myself almost as if that was a segue. You're looking for somebody like this. Well, here I am.
Right.
You know, without just, you know, being humble about it.
Right.
So sort of let them connect some of those dots, but then showing that, you know, yeah, highlight my experiences in the framework of what they're looking
right.
for. So, you know, something you'll ask me about a little bit later about internships and
yep.
stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, I still laugh. In college, everybody was working for their Goldman, you know, in investment banking. I was a lifeguard at the beach. And
that's hilarious. I love that part of your story, by the way.
And I'll tell you what,
I put that still on the bottom of my resume, and it was...
The conversation it starts.
And when I went to business school years later, I swear 9 out of 10 conversations yep. all started with or in, you know, quickly went to, so you were a lifeguard on the beach.
Yep.
You know, and also they were the best years of my life. And I was excited to talk about it. And there's all sorts of things that, you know, you could distill out of that that would be relevant for a job. But the truth is I didn't do anything that I was supposed to do. I did what I enjoyed and was, you know, ignorant and blissful about it.
And yet you are still well positioned. You made it through.
I did. Yeah, somehow.
We're proud of you. All right. So take us through the consulting application process and, you know, the next few years of your life.
Yeah. So after pulling my materials together, cover letter and resume, I sent them off to these different consulting firms in the book. I got a couple hits back. I remember calling my brother and asking him if he'd ever heard of this company, McKinsey or something. And I never forget sitting in the top of the tallest building in Atlanta for my interview, which was all these people flown in from all the Ivy League schools. And, you know, the girl sitting next to me goes, you know, they pay for your MBA. And I go, no, I didn't. Or sitting in the interview where they asked me, so you're familiar with the case study process, aren't you? And I said, no, but whatever it is, let's do it.
You showed up at a McKinsey interview unfamiliar with the casing process.
Needless to say, I did not get hired by McKinsey. However, I think just the audacity of that impressed them.
Get a load of this guy. Look what he just did. Yeah, it's hilarious.
I probably got called back just because they were so amused.
There's like 3 or 4 of them. Like, wait,
nobody had
you
never
doing
heard
stand-up
of it
comedy in front of them at that point.
But, you know, good attitude paid off. And ultimately, I did get some offers, and I went to work for a company in New York, although they, you know, they kept me down in Atlanta for a while. It was a healthcare. It was one of the leading strategy consultants in healthcare. And, you know, got to dive deep into that industry, which was helpful. Having an industry focus paid off later on, I think, also for me. So I got to learn the skills but also have content behind that. Maybe different for other people, but I think that was extremely valuable for me. It was something I could talk passionately about. You know, my mother is a psychologist, and she'd been dealing with all the billing and all the changes in the late 90s. And so for me, there's a personal connection.
Yeah.
And I think that's a theme also. And that allowed me to kind of get it, because I could say I'm passionate about this. I have a connection to this. I'm not doing this just, you know, to pad a resume or anything, but there's deeper meaning here. And then, of course, you know, I was able to sort of draw upon experiences to perform in the interview process.
Yeah.
By then, I'd figured out what the case study
you knew what casing was at that
yeah.
point.
And you know, and nailed that. And so I did that for a couple of years, did that for about 2 years. And then...
So at this point, you're 3 years out of graduation, right?
Yeah, I'm about three, four years out. Now, there was a little bit of gap. You know, summertime, I went back to lifeguarding, did a little restaurant, you know, waitering.
I love it.
At Chops in Atlanta, another experience. So, yeah, so now we're getting into, this is about 99. I'd been a consultant for about 2 years, started to think, okay, I'm not going to be able to change healthcare single-handedly. My firm is going through a big transition, somewhat imploding, and I have bigger things. You know, I got into this for a reason, and one of the most valuable pieces of advice from a mentor, because we all go through career stress, and I tell this to people all the time, is, you know, remember why you're here. And that was what one of my partners told me in the consulting firm when I was really conflicted about what was going on. And, you know, I remembered that I was there to get a set of experiences, a set of insights, and I felt like, you know what, now I understand. And now I want to go remember why I was here, which was I have these things I'm passionate about business, about more entrepreneurship ideas, and these crazy ideas. And I started to talk to people about it, which I was afraid to do. You know, I was too crazy, far out.
Yeah.
You know, businesses that could have social value. Remember, this is late 90s. So there's Ben and Jerry's and not many others.
That's right.
You know, this is a very radical idea, you know, that time. And, you know, one conversation led to another. They introduced me to an organization that only took MBAs as you know, sort of interns and so forth. I somehow sort of connived my way into getting an opportunity there. And at the same time, also found a program in the UK that gave me some international experience and exposure to development in the development process, which was also part of what I was looking for, is, you know, okay, I'm in a highly regulated industry like healthcare. all these others, you know, social values, you know, is what politicians make a decision on. Remember, I studied politics. I was in student government. So there's always this challenge between the guys who are sending out the signals and then the entrepreneurs and the businesses and the people who have capital trying to allocate it appropriately. And that's been my life mission ever since, is this, you know, understanding how you're creating incentives and then how people are responding to incentives, how enterprises responding to incentives, the private sector, and how to do that better and more efficiently and towards where I think the value needs to be. And that was sort of, you know, that's what I learned to talk about. And I found that's the other invaluable thing is don't be afraid to talk about your crazy ideas. And you never know who's going to connect you with who.
Did that put you at risk at your current firm?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you know, I was talking with like-minded people at my firm who were also getting disenfranchised a little bit. But at the same time, yeah, you know, no risk, no reward. That's what I learned from my first job is, you know, you got to be passionate about something and you can't be afraid to take a risk on something you believe in. So here it was, me finally, a number of years later, incorporating that into my life a bit.
Yeah, that's great.
Instead of trying to package myself, which I, you know, would fall into this mistake again and again later on, but, you know, you try and package yourself for what is advertised, and sometimes you need to do that, but you can't lose sight of why you're there or what it takes to succeed.
What I'm hearing is, like, you start your first job, you sucked it up a little bit, and, yeah, you joined a team because of the talent of that team, you know, but then you made an entire industry transition and job function transition to another city, New York,
correct,
right? And you're ever so slowly edging more towards something that you feel a little bit more passionate about, something that resonates more to you. And there's that arc to what your at least your story up to that point. Right?
Correct. That is precisely.
So now you're in London, right? Is that right?
So
did you cross the pond?
Yeah. So what happened is, so I actually, in the same week, as funny things happen, which was also the same week I quit my job out of frustration. I went home.
Oh, yeah.
I went home
and lifeguarded for a couple of weeks.
Oh, no, I literally quit my consulting job. I was in Boston on a gig, and I just literally told the partners, I, you know, because they were, you know, wanted things that I felt were, you know, borderline unethical.
Yeah.
At least in how they were treating, you know, me and the people around us about in dealing with it, and it was shady.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, I've had it, and it was scary as heck. And I went home, and in my mailbox was this big letter in, you know, funny shape because it came from the UK, and it was an acceptance to the London School of Economics and the program I had applied for.
And so you had applied.
So I'd applied, you know,
period.
As I started to have conversations.
Right.
And then, you know, and then so I went out west to go hang out with my roommate in California for a week and celebrate. And while I was there, I got a phone call saying I was also accepted to this program as the only person before or after. I don't know whether that's a, you know, speaking to my performance. But, you know, this opportunity to go work with entrepreneurs in Latin America for the summer. So all of a sudden, you know, I took that step off the edge from my, you know, prestigious consulting job and didn't know what was going to happen. And 24 hours later, as luck would have it, you know, I had my, you know, fall opportunity taken care of and the roadway to my future. And in the meantime, I got a bridge, which was this opportunity to go to Latin America and work with entrepreneurs as, you know, really part of their team. And, you know, funny how it works, but that was the result of that angst and that frustration and
insecurity, you know, and thinking about the future and you not feeling satisfied and you wanting more. And you said, you know, I'm gonna throw in some applications, but I'm gonna do it right. But I'm gonna put in some applications
And you know, getting my ideas out there, talking to people about what I thought was something I believed in. So, you know, and I didn't leave things to chance. Believe me, I called the director of the LSE of the program and I said, hey, I'm late. You've already got a deadline. He said, well, I'm just reviewing applications now. So you get me an application in the next 3 weeks, I will consider it. I said, yeah, because this is what I'm, you know, believe in and this is what I'd like to do. He said, well, that sounds like a very interesting background and interesting, you know, position. It would be additive, but let me see what you can put together in an application.
That doesn't always work, by the way.
Doesn't always work, but you know.
But to your credit, yeah, no, you acted on your passion. All right.
Yeah.
So now you got into these programs and take us from there.
Yeah, so you know, my thesis was
this is a 2-year program or 1-year program?
It's a 1-year master's program. Again, you know, really practitioner focused.
Yeah.
So the idea was, and most people go into policy or NGOs or the, you know, UN or World Bank kind of positions, although it's very private sector. It's very practitioner focused as opposed to, you know, going into a PhD program focused. But I basically, my thesis was going there. I put in my application was, I want to understand, like I said, how the policymakers think, what signals they're trying to send up, why, how they implement that, so that I can then go to business school, get the tools, backfill, if you will, the skill set I need that I, you know, I've only gotten partially through my experiences, so that I can then be one of those drivers from the private sector side. I'm a capitalist. I'm a private sector engine, or I want to be. And I believe that's where all the resources really are.
Right.
You know, the policymakers send the signals, and then, you know, the private sector are the people who drive the resources there.
Right.
And that I want to be in that seat, but I want to be able to read the traffic signs.
Right.
And I want to be able to do it better than others, so that I can help you know, be at the front of the pack and lead everybody. And so that was the thesis. So I got there and quickly dove into both my studies there, as well as started the application process to business school.
So let's start there.
Perfect.
So you're over there. You're in this development program. You're basically working your thesis, because you have to obviously start that sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And it is in line with a passion that you have, right?
Yep.
An extension of it. However, you realize, wow, that you want another capstone academic experience. You're looking towards, what else out there can I kind of add to this that can give me something that I don't already have, right? Is that, so start there.
That's correct. The opportunity to do this program was really a wonderful one-year segue that was relevant, right? You know, I mean, in some ways, gives me lots of challenges later on to explain it, because when people are looking at you who have a very narrow focus and have a very clear sort of traditional background, they don't understand this crazy path I've taken.
Right.
So, you know, I've learned a lot about communicating that yep. story. But it was a really nice detour. But ultimately, the goal was to go to the MBA program and get the skills and have the access to get into the career that would send me on my way.
Now, before, just to stop there for a second, I get tons of folks in presentations and, you know, across the whatever, and they're like, you know, this ongoing debate of the value of an MBA, you know, it makes sense for some people, others, not so much. For you, why did you know that an MBA would be great for you?
Yeah, because as I said, you know, giving you my academic history, clearly I never took other than a few business and accounting classes, right? So my practical skill set was truly by experience. And I'd excelled, and I had stories to tell about it, but I really didn't know what I knew and what I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
And so I needed to know, you know, from my own self, to understand what skills I needed, and to feel like I was now, I was prepared, or at least I knew sort of what the traditional path thought of. Even if I wanted to discard it later, or felt like that was, you know, not necessarily the best, you know, or necessary, I kind of needed to know that. And I also wanted to have access to the kinds of jobs and careers that I wanted. And that, you know, clearly was going to come or be aided by going to an MBA program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, you know, there's another side of taking on two more years of debt after already draining down my limited resources to go to the LSC.
Right.
was, you know, tough. And it really did prove to be tough, you know, when I got to business school.
Yeah.
We can talk about that a little bit later. But anyway, so, you know, that was the motivation. Did the application process.
How many schools did you apply to, and you know, what were they, if you feel comfortable talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, well, no, I applied to roughly 7 or 8. I did the kind of traditional analysis. I focused on schools that had a little bit more of a social bent or some connection with. So, you know, there was the Tucks, and, you know, I called us people, tried to find. There was Tuck, there was HBS, which had a social innovation program. There was Stanford, which had, you know, the double bottom line and this whole idea, you know, obviously a lot of entrepreneurship, you know, a few others. I don't like the cold, so I tried to stay away from Chicago, either school there.
Although brutal winner.
Brutal. I applied to Duke as sort of a safety, I shouldn't say safety school, but I applied to Duke as one that I felt, you know, a bit more confident about, and it was warm. And so that was it. I had about 7 or 8. There were some where it was like, well, the applications were almost similar. So I think I sent one to Northwestern because it was identical to the Duke application. I'd already applied to Duke. And most of those I applied second round. Duke, I think maybe Northwestern I applied third round, which was not, you know, is not the best strategy.
Yeah, I'd never say don't shoot for third round.
I think the interesting thing also to note here is that you know, I actually had an issue with my GMATs, which is something worth talking
about.
Yeah,
let's talk about that for a second.
Because, everything sort of swept me very quickly, right? I had this great game plan. I was a consultant. I would take the GMATs in the fall, do the prep courses, do everything that I hadn't done prior in my career to prepare better for. And, of course, all of a sudden I got swept away in a week and my, jumped from one thing to another with no breaks. And here I was in a one-year, very intensive, highly regarded master's program, also applying from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m.
Right. Yeah.
To, top-tier MBA programs. So studying for the GMATs became, I'd like to do it. It just never quite got there.
And you're probably not a naturally – most of us do not feel we're naturally good test takers. Most of us don't feel that way, at least.
Correct. And my career is a funny one of, I walked into the SATs and I didn't know there were prep courses for it. I told you how ignorant I was. I must be one of those few people who took the SATs cold.
Cold.
Like I'd never seen the bubbles.
You can buy a book for this?
So again, for those listening, advice is –
Prepare. Take it extremely seriously.
Get good advice. Don't listen to parents who don't know how the process works.
The way I see it, it's so competitive out there. I mean, there are so many people using resources like GMAT Prep, Manhattan Prep, Kaplan Prep. Just get the resources. They obviously cost money, but that's the level of competition you're going up against.
Yeah, even do things online, do the free tests. I mean, there's whatever level of resources you have. I mean, just prepare.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I, just as a quick side, as I have a young daughter who's now going into the New York school system.
Oh, yeah.
So I've just gone through testing where all of a sudden their parents who are test have their kids prepared and hire expensive consultants, 3-year-olds and 3.5-year-olds for the school system here in Manhattan. So it's ridiculous, and I don't think all of it's necessary, but you do need to be prepared, and the best way is to just take practice tests in advance so that you're comfortable and you know what you're getting into. And
absolutely.
I didn't do that. So I took the GMAT under the worst possible circumstances that you don't want to do. It was December 16th. I had – my applications were due, January 4th through 11th. And it was like the last test slot I could get in London. And I went in and,
you're just like, how stressful can I make this?
Right, exactly. I had studied for a weekend on and off. And I felt pretty good about it, but one blank moment, and you get stuck on a problem for 2 minutes,
yep.
And you're done.
Yep.
And that is what happened to me.
So recover from that.
So the bottom line was, I walked out there with not only a disappointing, a very, let's say, uncompetitive GMAT, and I went home. I pulled the plug out of my phone, and I typed up. There's that. Is there anything else you'd like us to know?
Yeah, additional information sections, yeah.
And I typed up a 3/4-page statement that tried not to be defensive, but basically tried to show, this is good information for people. And I had some feedback on it afterwards, which was great, before I finally submitted it. But it basically said, being a leader is about, and being in an MBA program is about making decisions every day. And I've had to prioritize, and here's my program, and here's all the things I'm doing. And I just, and I fortunately had like statistics class, which I had done very well in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to say, I have just gotten, I had to choose between spending time for the statistics exam and being in these leadership functions and meeting all these other deadlines or preparing for this. And ideally, I should have done both, or I should have done this better, but I didn't. And I've learned my lesson. But I made choices and I stand behind them.
Yep.
And this is the outcome. And I hope you understand. And I hope you see it the way I see it.
Yeah.
And, I think some bought it, some didn't. But it got me where I wanted to go. And
yeah.
So I applied to 7 or 8 schools. I got into the 2 I wanted the most. I got waitlisted on a 3rd. And I got another one that told me, you would have gotten in if you had not applied in the 3rd round. So just... they said you don't even need to have another alumni interview. It was it's just apply next year,
right?
Earlier,
yeah. And that's in so many words, just apply first round next year.
Yeah, just apply, and we already have you on file. And so I was grateful for that feedback. But That was an experience I would not do again that way.
Yeah.
You know, but somehow I, you know, God smiled on me for a change.
So, all right. So you made it through. So you got to Stanford.
I got to that school of business. Small school out on the West Coast. I also got good feedback, which, you know, or not good feedback, but feedback that resonated for a guy who was sitting in cloudy, stormy London for a year, which said, when I talked to alumni after I got in, you know, and this one said, you know, I got into both the schools I wanted to, and you know, you should just think, you know, when you're packing, it's either sunglasses or scarves. And I, you know, was looking at my ratty old scarf, and I said, I could use, I'd like to buy some sunglasses,
yeah,
now.
Sunglasses, so,
but honestly, that had, you know, very, very little to
do. You know what?
With
it. I remember when I got my, so at the time, but when we started school, like, they would let you know through packages, like, you'd get, I saw the acceptance package, and it was thick, so you'd get something thick, and it was like good news, or you'd get something very thin, and it's a one letter, and that's bad news. So I got into my apartment, I saw a thick package from HBS, and I was like, wow, yay! And then they called me, I had just come back from some trip or something like that, and the guy from HBS called me, and the week prior, Tiffany Scholl was working in the admissions office at Stanford, and she called me about Stanford, and I was with my nieces, and so I was like, oh my God, Stanford, I can't believe it, it's awesome. So when I picked the phone from this guy that called me about HBS, I was like, hey, this is awesome, you know, thank you for calling me. I also got into Stanford. He literally passes the phone to his girlfriend who went to Stanford, and so she's talking to me about Stanford. It was the most surreal experience. It was hilarious.
Well, it's actually you make a good point for people, you know, who are listening. A little bit, you know, the stress management of once you've applied. I had planned, so apparently they were all going to come out, and that's when you get all these things in the mail, mm-hmm. maybe not anymore. I had planned to take a trip. So I had actually, you know, my girlfriend at the time, we scheduled a trip to go take a vacation yeah. during that week. I just figured, I'll deal with it all at once, let it all pile up in the mailbox, and then I come back. I planned this trip, and so the envelopes are supposed to start coming, like, I'm in London, so I gave it a day or two. Like
these days it's emails.
Yeah, so it was supposed to be the second, and so I was going to take off on the first.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting, I come back late at night, I was sick, it was still kind of under the weather, and I get a voice message on, like, March 29th. From this woman who I had never even heard her name before. Yeah. She happened to be Marie McKinney. Director of admissions from Stanford.
You hadn't heard the name Marie McKinney.
So I had to Google.
That's hilarious, by the way. That's admissions director.
So I am the case study on the guy who is not prepared about anything.
All right. Anyway.
Non-traditional and unprepared. But
it still pulls it out.
But, you know, I listened to it over and over again. Congratulations, I want to congratulate you. And I just, you know, I started like screaming. It was 1 a.m, screaming at the top of my lungs. Yeah. I can't believe it.
Neighbors are calling the police, like, this guy's going nuts.
Well, actually, my neighbor did call, and she thought I was doing something slightly differently. And I said, well, for better or worse, not. I just got to understand. But it was funny because I had planned just to kind of let it all pile up and deal with the disappointment all at once.
Yeah.
And I got the phone call, and that was also a big thing for me too. You know, getting that phone call first from Stanford.
Let me ask you this: some of the best advice, and I tell clients this that work with me and work with us, and this is some advice that I got from an MD that went to another school across the country in a cold city. Began with a B, but he was like, Kevin, by the time you press send, you should feel like you went through therapy. You know, in what you've. How deeply you've dug within yourself, you know, under doing a self-awareness exercise and articulating to someone else why you're here, why you're alive, what you want to do by the time you die, and why you need to be at this particular school. Just going through that whole exercise, you should feel just like very proud.
I will
tweak it.
Yes, that is absolutely true. And having both a mother who's a therapist and a brother who's a journalist.
I didn't know your mom was a therapist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that adds a lot.
So, yeah, it explains a lot, too.
explains
I've been
so
in
much.
Therapy for decades. But, no, really, for people listening, it was, I mean, that was, so I've told you how unprepared I was for processes previously. Mm-hmm. And this was the thing I did right, which is I started early. And like I said, I showed it. I opened myself up to people.
Open up the chess
plan. When I went to London School of Economics, there was a guy there who was on a dual program from, I think, you know, Booth or from Chicago. And, you know, he really helped me. I had another good friend who I met down when I was in Chile who had gone, you know, who's an extremely bright guy who had gone to a very good business school. You know, I opened up my essays to them, and they gave me, one of them sat on an admissions committee, and they, you know, they gave me real hard, cold
there
truth.
You go. So you had feedback from the powers that
be. Yeah, and you know, yeah. And both, you know, both those as well as my brother, who's a journalist who really can help tell a story, you know, it was show, don't tell. So my first, I mean, I went through therapy, if you will, in my first round of drafts before I showed it to them, when I was proud and I felt like I had gotten something. And I showed, and I said, you know, I just can't quite get it over the edge here. And I showed it to them, and it came back, and it said, start over.
Yep.
I mean, my brother's brutal. He was like, he said start over a number of times. But it was, okay, you've just said what you want to say, but you haven't convinced me of any of it.
Yep.
So now show me. And so then it started to be, how do I come up with examples of each? And then it was, okay, these are good examples. Let's take, you know, pair them back and focus on this. And what's the line that connects all of these, and who you are, and where you came from, and where you're going. And then let's find the words that help tie it together in a very articulate manner. And as you know, when I got to business school, I actually then, you know, became the managing editor of the newspaper.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth is, I was always a verbal person, and my brother was always a, you know, a written person. And, you know, through that process, I gained one of the more important things was, I gained confidence in my writing and my ability to really distill and tell a message. And so confident that then I wasn't afraid to go put that out in front of a bunch of really smart classmates of mine, mm-hmm. you know, who were really, you know, really intimidating.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that was another thing I learned, you know, as you've heard me tell in a number of instances here, you know, you gotta, you know, this comes from Buddhism, you gotta be, you know, lean into the pain a little bit, you know, lean into the fear. And take that step. As you know, if you're training for you know, a race that you've never done before, as we've been talking about offline, you got to keep pushing yourself. And that's also what makes a great candidate.
Absolutely.
Somebody who shows that they're always taking a challenge on and not being afraid. And so, you know, the process itself sort of embedded in me the value of that and how that reinforces success.
Absolutely. No, I can talk for hours on that, but for sure. So let's now get onto the first year. So I want you to tell us, for those who are listening, what would you say is the best way to think about the first year of business school? Like, if people are, you know, if you got people in front of you and everyone's raising their hand, Dan, how should we be thinking about the first year of business school based on your own experience? What would you tell them? For me, like, just for 2 seconds, I'd say, look, you know, when we showed up at Stanford, right, 9/11 happened a day after orientation occurred.
Yep.
So we had this new environment, very intimidating people around you. You know, everyone's very excited, yet, you know, a little anxious about what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And, you know, everyone is clear that it's clear that everyone deserves to be there, but you know, you don't think you deserve to be there. So all these emotions are occurring on top of this enormous event. Right. And I just remember feeling like, wow, it's almost surreal. I felt like I was in a dream phase, like that first quarter. And then as second quarter and third quarter went by, looking back, I felt like a couple things. I said, wow, that was a hell of a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be. I said, wow, you know, I didn't really realize that. You know, I went through this kind of this confidence kind of blip. At first, I felt like, okay, I'm not going to make it. And then I kind of realized, you know what? Other people feel the same way I do. And it's only a matter of time for them that they share that with me. And it took like after the holiday break for us to start sharing that kind of stuff. Because it's like the duck on the water phenomenon. Everyone on top of the water looks like they are just having a grand old time. But underneath, everyone's secretly just scurrying, right? And so anyway, that's what the first year was for me. And I would tell anybody, you know, just understand that that's normal. And, but, so let's stop there for me. But
that is true. I'll give some advice that, you know, I didn't do, but, you know, in hindsight, I would do because of all the dynamics that you just suggested. You know, I would, the day before you get there, like the night before you show up on campus or you show up in the city, I would write down in a journal, you know, somewhere that you can refer, why am I here? Why am I going there? What do I want to do? And be honest with yourself. I want to make friends. I want to find a wife who's smart. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to, you know, whatever. I want to work on my golf game. You know, whatever it is. But be honest with yourself and write it down. Because the day you get there, it's going to be a swirl of everything. It is going to be drinking from a fire hose and decisions every minute, every day. And it's decisions not just on my career and my job choice and my it's extracurricular activities, it's social events. The point of business school, I think, a part of the screening process is there is more than you can ever possibly do in one day. It's the first time I've been confronted with so many great things you can do. I mean, literally, you know, sometimes at lunch, you know, do I go see Warren Buffett in room A? Do I go see, you know, I don't know, whoever, you know, the CEO of something in room B? Do I go see, you know, an Olympic athlete in room C, some famous entrepreneur in room D? And by the way, I also forgot to do my economics work, which is due in class afterwards, right? So it's like,
yep.
You're faced with all of that. And then, of course, it's also very competitive. And let's be honest, a lot of us are, a lot of people who go there, we're all competitive. And there's an element of insecurity in that. So everybody's sort of social checking everybody else. And so ground yourself. Know why you're there and know how you're going, you know, when it gets tough or you're spent at the end of a night, you know, look at that paper, dig deep inside and go, wait, I know how to prioritize my decisions that I'm facing today. And whether it's going to the party tonight or whatever, you know, I can remember it. Because my first year, and I had just come out of a very rigorous academic program, so I felt like, you know, core courses in statistics and economics, I had just done them and I just, you know, knocked them out of the park. I had trouble in them. And I don't think the trouble was just because, I don't think the trouble was the content, but it was everything together. It was, you know, wanting to do it all and, you know, then all of a sudden finding myself feeling like I'm not succeeding to the level that I want in any of it.
Right.
You know? And so then having to take a step back and realize, okay, I got to make some choices here and focus on what I want to focus on. And why am I here? I'm here to get a good, you know, get a good job, and I'm here to make friends, and I'm here to do some of these personal things I'm on a mission to do. And that means putting myself out there and taking on responsibility at the newspaper when, you know, that takes away from my ability to learn golf.
Yep. You know, that's profound, actually. That's great advice. I would add to that, you know, it's business school, you're taking out money to go have an experience. And just in me choosing Stanford, it was like, okay, I want an experience I otherwise would not have had. So I would add to that, dude, if I thought of the first year as going for breadth of getting to know my classmates and throw yourself in that situation of talking to a group of people that you normally would not have talked to, that you historically have no idea, you know, what is going on in their mind, whether they're from another country, another part of the world, another culture, another part of your own country, whatever. Put yourself, that's why you're there. You are there to grow, to stretch yourself. Yeah, I would say add that to your first year. Second year, you can drill down, but first year for sure.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, I'll say that, you know, in a word, explore. And you probably spend a whole lot of time in your application, or at least part of towards the end, saying how you want to go make use of all your other classmates, how you're part of a community, how you'll contribute to it and take from it, because that is what they want to see. They're building a community that's going to grow together. Well, so do it. You know, I mean, you know, you're right. Part of the biggest value of going to some of these schools, you know, are your other classmates who are amazing. And so don't let yourself, I mean, do what you want, but in my view, you know, don't just latch on to a clique of 12 people without connecting with all these other people. And the nice thing about the school that we went to and the size of those classes is that, you know, by the end of the time you graduate, you really kind of know everybody at some level or another, and they know you, and you know enough about them. And that has helped, you know, I think, you know, going on. So anyway, that's the first year for sure.
So how would you now transitioning out of first year, how do you think about your summer? And then we'll talk about second year to finish up.
Yeah, now we were in business school. It was the other financial crisis. So, you know, literally I you know, so how did I think about it? All right, so now I got smart and I realized that the only way to get into banking was to get a any finance job was to have some experience in it. So I focused heavily on, I was one of those guys always going to all the banking you know, interviews and, you know, cocktail parties, trying to get yourself noticed. And God, I hate those things.
Oh, yeah,
they suck so bad. But, you know, and you know, so you want to manage that.
And you're competing with people who had done it before, right? Yeah. You know, anytime you're doing a career transition, you're always competing with a sliver of folks that have done it before. So yeah, that can be intimidating.
So let's think about that for a second. So one thing, right, in the middle of the crisis, you get all these people who are analysts at Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and every other bank, who are like, well, you know what? I know banking. I can just do that for the summer. So they're there just because that's a safety, and you're there striving for it. So again, it goes back to everything we've said, which is, you know why you're really there and know what you have. And this goes into now, know what the job is and know what you have to offer it, and be able to articulate it very concisely. You know, I saw the, you know, for me, I could have said, you know, I saw management and I worked on projects, but it took capital to get them realized. And I have a lot of other ideas about that, but it always takes capital to make strategy work. Okay. That's what I want. And, you know, that was, I think, a good...
You beat that drum.
Right. And then, you know, then I could say, oh, you know, I have industry experience and I could talk, you know, whatever. And I had a personality. So that, you know...
And you're a lifeguard.
And and when all else failed, I could talk about being a lifeguard. So that was it. I mean, so, and I just, I went after it and you know, I did everything I could, and it still took a hell of a lot of luck. And it was like the middle of May. I had no summer internship. 2002, you know, everybody was laying off people.
Oh, yeah, the world's falling apart.
I went to interviews. I remember, you know, one unnamed bank that no longer exists down. I went to an interview in their office in LA, and they said, apologies for us not finding anybody. You know, nobody's here right now. We laid off 2/3 of this floor last week. I'm like, oh.
So it's like, well, what am I doing?
Yeah, here? So, and you are hiring because, like, well, you know. So anyway, you know, persistence. And again, know why you're there, and just don't let all the competition and the posturing, which is inevitable in business school, get you down. I mean, you know, that, I think that was the hardest part.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, you just, that distress of feeling like I can't compete against these people who've already done it and all this other stuff. I mean, if I could go back and do it all over again, I would just be so much more grounded and so much more confident. And you know, it's paid off now. And, you know, when I've had, you know, career transitions and so forth, you know, just knowing that I'll get there. I know what steps I got to do. I know I got to hammer away. That's what I learned from those experiences, but I was, you know, emotionally much more affected by it.
So you pulled it out. Obviously, it was May. You got the summer offer. And was it in New York? Or you?
No, I was actually very, very lucky. I got to work in the Bay Area. Worked in San Francisco in a merchant banking /
That's right.
Ledfin group, small group. Got along with that team really well, and had a great time. And it gave me that nugget of experience to start talking about for full-time jobs.
Yeah, yeah. It was enough to tee you up for that.
And that wasn't easy either. And I'll be honest, I graduated in 2003, midst of the crisis still. I graduated with no job. Went, you know, moved down to LA for a few months. Well, I actually had a job, and that offer unwound because of, like, some managing director came over and brought his staff with him. That was very disheartening.
We're getting too far ahead. Let's go to second year now. So second year happened. So what kind of advice would you give someone? So how was second year different from first year, right?
Well, second
year, elective intensive, how did you think about it differently? What advice
would you give? Second year, you choose, right? So this, you know, this became a lot more fun. What you want to work on, what interests you, and you have to balance it. But so I obviously wanted to step it up with my finance because I needed to. I needed to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I was able to choose those that I found a little bit more interesting. We had some great, you know, McDonald class and a few others that were interesting, just bringing in, you know, people to hear from. And tried to be a little bit more relaxed. You know, you sort of gotten through the hard part. You had your friends. You had your summer experience. It's a much greater confidence, ability to contribute. Took classes where we had some of the Sloans in it. So these are much mid-career professionals. So really got to, I think, finally get into my groove in the second year. And, of course, unfortunately, it was dominated by, you know, a job search still. And again, you know, I think it's important. I needed it. I got a lot of debts, but, you know, probably going back, I'd be a little bit more relaxed about it.
Yeah. Prior to, the world's financial crisis, you know, in 2008, The one prior in 2000, I think that the bottom of the market of the Dow was literally like March 2000 and 2003, I want to say, or something that spring when we graduated. So, you know, it was very dire.
Right. This was the post-bubble, post-Enron,
crash. Yeah. Firms would show up on campus, McKinsey and whatnot, and I remember that they would make a statement, hey, listen, we want to maintain a relationship with the school, but we have no offers to give.
Yeah. Well, Goldman showed up. They took us all out to their office and said, we're closing the office. There's no more Goldman office out here in Palo Alto. And we're not going to be able to extend any offers, but stay in touch. I tried to give that to my landlady for rent, but it didn't work. Like, so I had to keep working.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Okay, so I think second year, that's when I basically, just for me personally, I kind of shifted in my head. I'm going to attend a lot more visiting speakers. And I think that's when, I think Steve Jobs came our second.
Yeah, he did.
I remember when that happened. Like, because everyone expected.
It was iTunes.
Yeah, everyone expected for him to talk about the iPod, and he changed it, and he just talked about iTunes the entire time, the software. And that blew everyone's mind. But, I mean, that's the genius of Jobs.
Yeah, I think most people were slightly annoyed because we thought we wanted words of wisdom, his leadership, and all the stuff. And he came to announce his new product launch, which is this silly little thing called iTunes.
Yeah, what's iTunes?
And he literally walked us through the software. And we were like, through the program and go on this website. And we're like, come on.
It was like a dry run.
In hindsight, we feel so lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but we were upset at the time. I remember that.
Yeah. But that's it. That's the idea of exploring. And I think, there you start to explore. I went to many more, brown bag lunches with leaders, entrepreneurs. And I think all of that, when you're to deal with the anxiety of looking for a job out of an MBA and ever on, it ultimately comes about experience. And when you talk, when you've, been able to interact with people, ask questions, you really can translate that into experience that you can talk to.
Right.
I was talking with this, CEO or entrepreneur and, blah, blah, blah. It really, you can just show more connections and it makes your conversations more personal. You may still have to talk about how to do a DCF. But you can talk about how you did the DCF for, the internship and for this interesting company or in this class that you took that you were so psyched about, as opposed to the, 100 other people that are the 99% of the other people that come in and rattle off what they just had in their, corporate finance class.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And those, being on the other side, having now done a lot of those interviews, are the people that stick in your mind and not the ones who check the box.
Yeah, I would say, after graduation, there's a period that you go through where you're, let's talk about this and then we'll wind up. But
yep.
I think there's a period that you come out of one of these fancy schools and you suffer from the phenomenon of you think you can throw everything into a matrix and figure it out. When in reality, it's like, dude, you just got added to a team to do a very specific thing, calm down and just learn and get good at a skill set. And I think a lot of folks suffer from that when they come out of these fantastic programs. They think that they need to be promoted to co-CEO immediately, and it's this knock against folks that have this mindset.
Yeah.
So I would say, what would you say that the few years after business school, how should you be thinking about developing your skills and how you should be thinking about the world and yourself?
Okay, people listening, please. Put this on your list when you go into business school and read it when you come out. Do not think you know everything having come from a top X business school, because there is nothing more annoying or a faster way to be hated and booted off of a team than being that guy.
Yeah, you do not want to be that person.
Remember, it's a key that helps unlock opportunities and helps you find your way to add value and feel satisfaction in your life and be able to have those skills. But once you get accepted, if you go to a bank, you go into a consulting firm, you go into a product management firm, you're part of the team. And find ways to try and offer value, but don't necessarily think that people need to digest it or that you actually know it. Because guess what? Everybody around you also has one of those or may not, but has a lot of other experience that may be even more valuable without such a credential or an expense.
Yep.
So really respect the people around you and respect what you don't know. And obviously, try and offer value as opposed to feeling like it's inherent in anything that you put on paper.
I would say two words. Instilling trust. If you, any way you can instill trust in other people around you, especially when they're older than you, I mean, that is what you need to be concerned. I remember the first job I took out of you know, I worked for the guy who bought the company out from a search fund model, you know, the healthcare right. company, and he hired four of us out of our class, and we were the first MBAs that this 80 million revenue top line healthcare services company out in California had hired. And so everyone around us on sales teams, we were hired to basically run you know, offices, you know, P&L responsibility. Okay, we could roll up our sleeves and get management experience, real world management stuff, you know, as opposed to watching numbers wiggle. Guess what? The biggest problem was having these other folks who had been doing it for 10 years trust us.
Yep.
That the biggest issue. So, your words resonate.
Yeah, and, you know, so, I mean, that was the problem. I mean, that was a challenge being a young, you know, a young whippersnapper in consulting, in banking, is how can you get in front of and, you know, getting on the phone before consulting, talking to CEOs when I was a 22-year-old guy out of college. And I would get this, I'd literally get a cranky old man on the phone going, I've been doing this for 30 years, boy, what can you tell me? And I'd say, I don't know anything about what you do, but what I do know is, you know, X, you know, and if you give us a chance, let's come in and talk about it. And if we can help you, you'll figure it out because you're a smart guy. And if we can't, we'll both agree that we tried and it was worth the conversation, you know. And that's the kind of stuff you have to keep with you now. And you know, just, you know, I know we'll wind up shortly, but you know, when I look for jobs or, you know, or you know, people are talking to me about joining their teams or anything like that, you know, it's still, you know, one of the key things is, you know, humility. You know,
exactly.
if you look at job postings, when I posted jobs, you know, I'm looking for smart, aggressive, XYZ, and humble.
Yep.
You know, because, you know, we got real, and when you get into the world of, you know, particularly outside of some of these financial institutions, you know, I've worked at an energy developer, a number of them now, and, you know, it's about creating assets, and the finance is a function to do that, and moving capital, but, you know, it's about building real value assets. And so you got to be humble because you got to deal with local communities. You got to deal with, you know, partners, all, you know, no matter what you are, if you have your own business, you've got to deal with clients. You got to be pretty humble with them, right? You know,
absolutely.
Everybody has a boss. There's always a client. You've got to approach everybody with the idea of some sense of humility.
Absolutely. And so this is going to be the last question. We're going to keep this nice and tight. We're at just about an hour here. So, last question, I'll give the answer first and I want you to go. But, so the question is, I get this a lot, obviously, is, you know, how in your own career, in your own life, has going to Stanford and receiving an MBA helped you, enabled you, kind of served as an experience that has changed your life? So my answer to that, and this is going to be professional and personal, right? So I would say it's obviously a signal, you know, it's... People will have certain expectations and a picture of you before you even step foot in their office or even shake your hand, just by the sheer, you know, fact of, you know, what you did, where you went to school. And that can be, it is what it is. You know, that can be very helpful. It can get you interviews. It can get you business. You know, and all that can be very great. It also, yeah, there is a skill set dimension to it, right? So having gone through a certain experience, you kind of learn, you know, and pick up tools that you otherwise maybe could not have picked up, granted, even if you would have opened up books on your own, right? Certainly the network aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. You meet people that, you know, I'm just as close to as, you know, some of my undergrad buddies, absolutely. And I'd say finally, it for me personally, this is Kevin speaking here, it's, you know, just in like the how I approached it, you know, just in taking classes that are specific to the school, like touchy-feely, interpersonal dynamics is the technical name for it, and just kind of the culture, It made me realize a couple things about the power of personal connections and how we interact with other people. So, you know, it's once you get to a point where you realize, you know, one of the main reasons why organizations and teams blow up isn't because someone couldn't do the actual job function. It's because of a personality difference or a personality issue or some interpersonal thing. It makes you look at things in a different way. When you go out and start your own business someday, or you're asked to launch your own division someday, and who you pick to help enable you to pull that task off. What it makes you think of it very differently and appreciate different things. So for me, that's trickled over even into my personal relationships, you know, how I've kind of identified what I feel and how I articulate that. and appreciate different disciplines, different perspectives, and the power of that. So that, for me, is what I got out of that experience. So for you, you have to talk that long, right. Or you can talk longer, but what would you say?
Well, your last point is perhaps one of the two or three most important ones, and you cited one class that we had, which is this interpersonal dynamics, which puts you on the spot and give you real feedback. And that has been one of the most valuable experiences because, you know, one of my former bosses once said, you know, there are people out there, you know, they're slick to the point of slippery.
Yeah.
And you don't really realize, you know, we learn how to finesse and be political and communicate but not offend. And I've become so good at that. And it's funny, and now post-business school, and particularly after some hard years in banking and other experiences, you know, I've learned, and frankly, my career now is based upon the fact that I just have so much trust with people that I'm really grateful trust me, who are in nice positions now that I can do business with. But it all stems from being completely honest while not being offensive and knowing where that line is and knowing how to be nuanced but not be smarmy or slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a heck of a lot of practice.
It's a skill. It can be. It has to be.
It's a life skill.
It's a skill. It's a muscle. It has to be developed and appreciated and watered.
Agreed.
And
it's a lifelong skill. And then the other last, you know, I think the other thing I'll say, which is almost what I started with when I said I wanted to go to business school, which is to know what I don't know. Okay. Now I know what they teach at the business schools. Now I know what all these guys who are in all these different places and whether they're making $1 billion or $2 or whatever they're doing with their lives, whether they're, you know, have some Zen retreat, I know what training they had. And I have a much greater confidence in who I am because at least I know how the world works a little bit. And last thing I'll say is, you know, one person once said to me is, you know, about going to a different business school, but applies to all of these. You know, going to business school is a little bit like knowing who everybody is in the world. And what he meant is, I could drive down, after going to XBS school, I could drive down the street and I would see a company on the side of the road. And I'd be like, I read a case study on that company. I know about that company. I read a paper. All of a sudden, I know who these companies are. I know who these people are. I have a much better sense of that. And I think that was another, you know, eye-opener. All of a sudden, I started to see the connections that over time I can, you know, the ones that are relevant to me. But even if it has nothing to do with my industry or anything I'm interested in, I read about it, I kind of got an idea of what's going on and the world, both from a personal standpoint, from all the relationships, as well as from an organizational standpoint, is a much smaller place. And then, you know, to your point of, you know, there are lots of connections. Well, you know, my statement to that is, you know, doors only open if you knock on them. So mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how many you have available to you or not. It's all about you knowing how to go after them and knock on them and open them. And, you know, of course, going to Stanford gave me some more doors to knock on. But, you know, if I didn't have it, you know, I'd find a connection some other way. I'd find you and I'd use your, you know.
Yeah.
And if I have something worthwhile to talk about, you know, you'd probably introduce me even if I didn't go to the same school.
Of course I would.
Thanks.
Dude, very, very good points. Absolutely. Dude, this has been awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is good.
Somewhat therapeutic.
Oh, my God. No, I feel like a big weight has been lifted off my chest for some reason talking with you, Dan.
Well yeah. You know, I'll go cancel my therapy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Found out some stuff I didn't know, by the way. This is good. All right. Well, cool. So that we're at an hour and 8 minutes. Well, that's a perfect timing.
That's great. I hope everybody had a good run or, you know, didn't fall asleep in their cubicle listening to this.
Yeah, right. Just replay it if you're getting...
You can tell them it was the earnings report and, you know they met guidance.
That's exactly... There you go. Exactly. That'd be our code. So, hey, guys, hopefully you enjoyed this episode of Alumni Grit. I'm Kevin Williams, and we had Dan Fleischer here. And, yeah, if you like this, you know, give us some feedback. Get on our Facebook page. Just pump in Oneida Admissions Consulting, and you'll find the episode on our Facebook page. And, yeah, leave a comment. Let us know what you thought of this. So that's it. We'll, guys, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.